Well, folks, if you've made it this far, it's episode 4 of the video podcast. Episodes 1, 2, and 3 covered the first two lessons that philosophy, specifically epistemology, that we taught with the freshmen. We answered the question, what is the purpose of school? And we also answered the questions, what do I know and how do I know it? So now, even though it's episode 4, we're moving on to the third lesson. Again, Dr. Rapp is teaching this lesson to our staff, who is role-playing 14-year-old freshmen. And in this third lesson, we jump into the guiding question, what are the different kinds of knowledge? And this is where I think it really gets exciting. So thanks for sticking with us. I'll see you on the back end of the video podcast. Let's just jump right in.
All right, well, lesson 3, it really comes down to get to the heart of it, is, you know, the idea of how we know things, the three modes, and we reviewed those three modes of our senses or our personal experience, right? Testimony or belief in what others tell us, and our reason or inference.
So we have the three modes of knowledge, which we talked about yesterday: observation, inference, and belief, or as we said last time, sensory experience, reason, and testimony. We see how those three terms are related, even though I didn't articulate it the exact same way. Okay. Do we still agree that those are pretty natural? When I asked you to tell me about something, you went to all three of those. No one told you how to do that. You just do it, right? It's not like Principal Rapp told you how to do this. Okay. Didn't come from authority. It's just from within, from your nature.
So they lead us to know two kinds of things, really, or at least, yeah, two kinds of things. Things that are material, that we can see, touch, taste, smell, or things that we can sense, things that are sensible. Or things that are immaterial, that we can't see, touch, taste, smell, things that are insensible, that our five senses can't wrap themselves around. It's really kind of the critical point, because this is one of the big departures in philosophy, is, are you a materialist or not? Do you believe that the only things that are real are those things that you can see, touch, taste, smell, and everything else is the realm of opinion or whatever, any, you know, fill in the blank there. Or are there things that you can't see, touch, taste, smell that are just as real, if not more real, than those that you can? Mm-hmm. So that's where this lesson was leading and what we were trying to get to.
Plato was perhaps the first to realize is that what we do in the case of intellectual knowledge is something inherently immaterial. Immaterial meaning not material. Not something you can touch, taste, smell. Immaterial. We can know things that we have not, and in some cases cannot, detect with our senses. For instance, is a 100-sided geometric figure possible? Sure it is. But how do you know? Have you ever seen one? Probably not. Can you even imagine it in any detail? Try to form a picture in your mind of a shape with 100 sides. No, you can't. And yet, you still know. Or try this one. Could my childhood dog named Max breathe underwater? I bet you know the answer. But how do you know? Did you ever meet Max? Did you ever see what he could do? Of course not, but you understand the nature of a dog, which enables you to know things about him, like that he didn't have gills, without ever needing to make any physical observations. Here's another one. What's 1 billion things plus 2 billion things? Sound familiar? Any idea? Right, it's 3 billion things. Now, how do you know that? Do you need to do a physical survey, go into the physics of the situation, ask about the molecular makeup of the things, or about basic forces operating in their region? No. Did you need to physically experience the things in question? No, again. So even without seeing, touching, hearing, smelling, or tasting these things, you know the answer to the question.
Yeah, I think the easiest, like, entry point example, you might disagree with this, for me, that makes sense to a lot of people, is the idea of, we'll say, three, right? If I tell you to show me three, right, what are you going to do?
You're
going to put up three fingers. And that's not three, that's three fingers. If I tell you to show me three, you might put three pencils or something on the desk, and that's not three, that's three pencils. So the idea of threeness, if you will, right, mm-hmm. The idea of three in and of itself is not something you can see or touch or taste or smell, but is it real?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, and it really sheds light on so many things that we can see, touch, taste, and smell, and it helps us make sense of the entire universe. But, you know, numbers are, it's hard to argue that threeness is a real entity, a real essence, but it is. And so if there are things that are real that you can't see, touch, taste, or smell, then that opens up the door to a whole lot of things that could be real that you can't see, touch, taste, or smell.
Dr. Rapp, you're in good company with using the numbers, because that's actually the way Plato teaches it. He says mathematics.
Plato got that from me.
Yeah, well, exactly. Mm-hmm. This is an astounding thing that Plato would say, and it's connected to mathematics. This literally came up in my class yesterday with the seniors, and the gasp was audible, because there's a phrase that you've been at home. You may have even heard this phrase: "Know thyself." Mm-hmm. It was above. It was written above the doorway of the Delphic Oracle. Mm-hmm. That's a piece of trivia for your ancient philosophy professors out there. But that phrase, "Know thyself," you know, when we hear that as modern day people, we think, "Oh, I should get to know me and my feelings and my inner psychology and all that stuff.
My personality.
Mm-hmm. But that's not quite how it was meant in the ancient Greek philosophy, in the ancient Greek philosophical sense. What they meant was, know the kind of creature you are. Mm-hmm. And if you can know mathematics, which themselves are invisible and immaterial, mm-hmm. then that means you must be, at least in part, some aspect of you must be invisible and immaterial. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this insight means that you are more than your body, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that there's more to you than meets the eye. In other words, mathematicians are responsible for discovering the soul. Mm-hmm. And once you really let that sink in and realize these guys are not Jewish, they're mm-hmm. not Christian, this is mm-hmm. 400, more than 400 years before Jesus, we're talking about people that were certain that there was more to them than their physical bodies.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible moment.
Your senses, as we've shown, are how you know the material world. But if you're able to know something that goes beyond your senses, then you're knowing something that goes beyond the material world. You're knowing the immaterial. Now here's the kicker. If you're able to know what is immaterial, then you must be immaterial. Right? How could you connect with the immaterial realm unless you had something immaterial in you? Your senses know material things because your senses lie in the material world, eyes, ears, tongue, etc. But if your intellect knows immaterial things, it must be because it lies in the immaterial world. Finally, if we can know things without relying on matter, remember you don't need to rely on material investigation to know 1 billion plus 2 billion, what 1 million plus 2 billion is, then it seems very likely that we can exist without relying on matter. Again, I can really know something even though I know it. What I know isn't physical. But if I can really perceive or detect a non-physical reality, if I can connect to that dimension, it must mean that there's something non-physical about me too. But if there's something non-physical about me, then physically speaking, it's reasonable to think that when the physical part of me goes to pieces at death, the intellectual part of me lives on. It's reasonable to presume the mind continues to exist after the death of the body, which is, of course, the standard view of the vast percentage of humanity for the vast percentage of human history.
And this particular piece is talking about how do we know we have a soul, mm-hmm. and why? Because the implication, this may not seem immediately obvious, the kinds of things that we can know tell us about the kind of creatures we are. Mm-hmm. The kinds of things that we can know tell us about the kinds of creatures we are. So for example, are we creatures that can only take in the physical world, that which I can see, that which I can smell, taste, everything that Dr. Rapp was talking about? Or mm-hmm. am I a creature that can also perceive more than that? Mm-hmm. And this is probably why this is at the one of the most explosive moments of I think a soul to learn, mm-hmm. to actually get their head around this means the entire world opens up in a completely new way. Mm-hmm. If I am the kind of creature that has the potential to know immaterial things, reaching my full potential means doing so. Mm-hmm. It's like a kid on a team who you know has the potential to be a better player, who mm-hmm. has the potential to be a leader if they would. Yeah. And you, even if they have a decent game, the coach looks at them and says, that kid's not reaching his potential.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. If God gave us, in this analogy, if God's the coach mm-hmm. and we're the players. Yeah. And he says, but I gave you the power for more.
Yeah.
Why? Actually, it wouldn't. We're going to be underselling ourselves mm-hmm. if we don't develop that. Yeah. It's also worth saying, too, that if there's any philosophy professors listening at home, too, that the Aristotelian insight of this and disagreement with Plato is that mm-hmm. the spiritual world is actually shot through the material mm-hmm. world, which is the kind of wedding yeah. between these two things. It's not like, oh, the spiritual stuff is all the way in this different realm, mm-hmm. which is actually what some philosophers believed. What the church has really embraced, following kind of Aristotle's lead, is the spiritual and the material are interpenetrating, and for to be human means to live in the material but be able to to grasp the immaterial.
How many philosophy professors do you think we have in our
community? I have no idea, but maybe if they ever listen to it, they're going to want to know, and they're going to say,
it's an important point. No. It's an important point.
And it's important for our theology
yeah.
to get a little theological. This is the basis of the sacraments.
Yep.
Like, you have physical stuff and you have spiritual stuff that's mm-hmm. shot through the two mm-hmm. things. That is the lesson of a sacraments class.
Yeah.
Where is that language coming from? The language of transubstantiation that we take for granted, that's St. Thomas using categories of Aristotle to talk about what God has done.
Mm-hmm.
So and when you see that this is actually all the way through reality,
mm-hmm.
And it might be said, because I think this a discerning parent might say, wow, this is abstract. Why are we talking about this? Mm-hmm. I would point to St. Augustine in his Confessions, mm-hmm. Points out when he's writing his biography, his spiritual biography, he narrates his whole conversion, and he narrates actually three different moments of his conversion. The last one is where he realizes he's a child of God. Mm-hmm. That's probably what most of us think of when we think conversion. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, he has a conversion where he realizes he is actually in grave need of mercy, that he's a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
That's another conversion. Mm-hmm. But prior to both of those is a conversion to what he calls philosophy, which is precisely this. When he realized at the hands of philosophers who were not entirely correct, but at least had this correct, mm-hmm. there's more to the world than meets the eye. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, his world shifts. Mm-hmm. Things don't have to happen in that order, but if we're talking about the full heart, the full integration of the human person, this has a role to play that we've got to bring into the dialogue of our education of our kids.
That in the particular of Dr. Rapp, okay, I exist. But there are also, I also have a nature that transcends me, that is immaterial, right? I can be a man, but you can also know maleness or masculinity. I can be a human, but humanness or human nature transcends me and exists beyond me. What we're saying here are that immaterial things, these ideas, these natures, are just as real as the material things that participate in them. Maybe even more real. That there is the material and the immaterial. What I would say, the sensible and the insensible, that which you can sense and that which you cannot. This is what all that we've been talking about has been leading to. If you reject universals, if you reject immateriality, if you reject that there is anything beyond that which we can see, touch, taste, sense, and smell, then you must reject the idea of the mind. You're just a brain. You must reject the idea of the nature of things. That's just a category or a name you made up so that you could talk about things more easily. You must reject an entire thing that has actually comes before any sort of religious belief about angels or demons or God.
And I think so many people, when you start talking about this, the initial reaction is, why are you talking about Plato? Yeah. This is not practical. It's not helpful. Well, it might be worth knowing even if it's not practical, but I think you can already see that there are practical implications of this that are playing out in our world.
Yeah.
Not just with the political questions of gender and how that's playing out in our culture right now, but also like things like the metaverse or things like what technology is making possible. Does it matter whether my body is actually in the same room with somebody or not. Is it just as good for an interaction to be conducted in the technological sphere as it is in person? Well, man, we had that play out during the pandemic. Sure. And I mean, these very abstract ideas have very practical implications, and the implications for these kids are far, far greater than they were for us.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think we see right here that as we get into this abstract idea, that mathematics helps us to see that there is an immaterial realm that interacts with, that is within but also transcends the physical and material realm, and that our ability to know it shows that we are both material and immaterial. Like you used the word amphibian once, right?
Yeah.
We're like amphibians. Yeah. Like we live both in the material and the immaterial. Boy, that is so important for us to understand for how we conduct our daily lives and for the choices we make and for the choices these kids are going to have to make.
I want you to write material/sensible.
In the first box or above the first box?
In the first box. Thank you. Great question.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And in the other box, the immaterial or the insensible. So, what do I mean by this? I'll give you an example. Maybe I'm a narcissist, but human nature. What's the difference between talking about a human or talking about human nature? Tell me what's different between those two things. Compare them in your mind. Give me something. Yeah, go ahead.
You can see a human being not. You can't see someone's human nature.
One is visible, one is invisible. Yes. What else is different?
When you think about material, or you think about a human, you think about a lot of times a particular human.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Here you're talking about the particular. Here you're talking about the universal. I can talk about the banana sitting in your pantry at home and the banana sitting at my pantry at home. Those are two different particular bananas. But we can also talk about what does it mean to be a banana? And that's universally true for all bananas. It's not just humans, right? We can talk about me here as a man and him here as a man, and we can also talk about what is the nature that we share in. What else is different between them?
I don't know if this works, but you as a human exist in material does not exist.
What do you mean by exist in time?
Like you're here, like changing as time progresses.
I change. What changes about me? Be gentle.
maybe your age.
Yes, good. I'm a little chunkier than I was. You can say it. Okay. My hair. There's lots of. What did she say? My ability to run. It hurts a little more coming from Mary. That one stung. I'm just kidding. It does. You're exactly right. No, but listen to this, guys. Hey, and actually, this is super helpful. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I might be corrected by this, but every cell in my body will be replaced within a 7-year cycle, right? Our bodies are constantly in change and in flux, right? Why? Because many material processes are happening to us. We intake food. We export waste. We do things, not do things, and it changes. But does this, what a human is, change? No, it's unchanging. I might use the word eternal. Yes?
Oh, I was going to say,
Let me rephrase. Let me put that. I'm going to say permanent. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, okay.
It's a better
Maybe
word.
Maybe this is the same thing, then, but like we're not permanent.
Yes.
We're
material.
We decay. All material things decay.
Okay.
These things do not. They're eternal. Yes, Stanley.
You talked in one of the ones, like you're made of matter, atoms, cells, human nature is not.
Yeah, exactly. I'll put stuff. Not stuff. It's actually a really helpful distinction. My mind is not the same as my brain. even though they interact. Even though the immaterial makes use of the material or works through the material, they are not the same. And we know that because when I die, my brain's still sitting there. But something has changed. Something has left. Matthew.
I was going to say material or sensible is imperfect, while the immaterial is perfect.
What are you saying? What are you trying to say about me? All right, imperfect. Yeah, and you know what, Matt? This is a great time to review. What did we say last class about perfection? It can mean without flaw, which actually applies here, but there's another way to think about
to completion.
To completion. That's right. And think about what happens to a human when they're born. There's a cycle of growth and decay, right? It's almost like they're always changing, moving towards something, right? It's never stable. It's incomplete. But human nature is complete. Yeah.
The cell that you came from your parents' cells, but your mind did not come from your parents' mind.
Wow. Hang on just a second. If the material comes from the material, the immaterial must come from the immaterial.
Let's go.
Jackie.
Yeah, I'm going to end on that one.
These two lists are really important to think about, too, because they describe the reason why the ancient world, the ancient mind, mm-hmm. was not. It's not that they didn't know about the material world, nor that they didn't think science was possible. Mm-hmm. It's that they weren't interested. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have the option between knowing something that's going to decay and something that's going to be permanent.
Mm-hmm.
Which one is more fitting for your nature?
Mm-hmm.
If you could, if you are a creature that's going to outlive everything, why would you waste your time hoarding up physical stuff that's not gonna last? You're gonna outlast it.
Mm-hmm.
So if, and this is why, like, once you start realizing this philosophy, it makes more sense to understand that it was a way of life. It was kind of like a monastic discipline. You entered into philosophy and you committed your life to it.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it came with some amount of some kind of vow, some kind of asceticism.
Mm.
So what does that mean? Well, it means to be a philosopher. It meant you were basically joining a kind of order.
Mm.
Okay, so then imagine later Christianity comes along and they realize, wow, you guys are like committing your lives for something that you know is invisible and unchanging. We know who you're talking about. It's not just a what, it's a who.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Yeah.
And now you have, I'm compressing and probably being unfair a little bit to the history, but that is what occurs in Western monastic tradition,
mm-hmm.
To where now we have monks and sisters who dedicate their lives to pondering eternal truth mm-hmm. himself.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's our destiny.
Right. Yeah. Or think of it, even those, for many of our parents listening, yep. you know, their kids have some faith in that which is
right.
immaterial, but they have one category of everything that I have experience of, mm-hmm. and then I have God and angels.
Yeah, and it's separate. It's and up it's, here to the upper right-hand
it's
corner.
It's just completely
right?
separate, like, oh, that's nice, and I'll probably figure out some more about that when I die. But what this does is help, as Sebastian say, see that the immaterial is more than just this idea of God or maybe somebody who's waiting for me after death. Mm-hmm. But it's actually supercharged through all that we see and touch and taste
right.
already. And it's how we exist now, how we understand the world now, and how we understand who God is and who
right.
we are.
Maybe for something for all of us to ponder is, could it be that even though we are professing faith, we are still living in an unaware manner,
mm-hmm.
because we're unreflective, like atheists.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then what we've actually done is fundamentally introduced a huge rift between faith and reason.
Yes.
Even though we say, oh, it's faith and reason, science
right.
and theology don't have to be enemies, but without actually seeing this, It's like we're just doing lip service.
Right.
And we can't see why.
And for our kids, they don't know what right. they don't know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
or
so
or for us.
For us, we don't know what we don't know.
I had a great moment with one of the teachers after the lessons, which when he was sitting there and we were talking about the three modes of knowledge, and he just said, you know, I was sitting there and I was like, this is so basic, but why am I enjoying it so much?
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was giving language to things he always knew and right. wanted to express to someone in these moments of, you know, you someone you love doesn't believe what you believe, or someone you care about really, you know, disagrees with you on something, and you know mm-hmm. what they're saying is wrong, but I can't actually articulate it. And it's giving language right. to things that maybe we know at some level, but have never really come to terms with right. in a way that we have it. You know, and I think it's worth reiterating, I've said it before, but this is the question I get a lot of, is you're turning your attention away from things that are really important, that might be on a test at some point, or might impact scholarship, might impact college, whatever it might be. But, you know, part of why we're doing it in seminar is because we don't want to take away from the other great things that are happening in school. But also, we're doing it because it will supercharge what they're able to do in everything else. It will take it not... It will not limit what we can do in science or what we can do in math or what we can do as writers. It is going to take it to the very next level because we see that this is all of a piece. It all fits. It all. It's not just me trying to learn as much of this pile of knowledge as I can, but it's actually me exercising a faculty that already exists within me in whatever room I walk into.
A moment ago, I said that the ancient world saw these two categories, the material and the invisible, and it said, well, why would we waste our time with the material? We have the invisible. That was an age. And then modernity essentially flipped it around and pursued the material to the exclusion mm-hmm. of the invisible, not without great fruits. Everything we know about modern science is because of a focus on that. The task before us is just the task that God would give the kind of creatures we are, which mm-hmm. is we need to hold these two things together. Mm-hmm. We can play from both. They don't have to be, there is a whole training that goes into understanding each, but a Catholic education should be able to do both.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And
And we're at the time now where the accomplishments of focusing only on the material have brought us to the face of, oh, we have questions we can't answer with this.
Right.
And so it's now abundantly obvious how much we need the second one. But we were always meant to have both.
Right.
We were always meant to be able to walk, you know, swim in the water and walk out on the land both at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is a great opportunity for our kids.
Okay, that concludes episode 4. Again, the end of lesson 3. We really dive into what Mr. D'Amico calls the sensibles and the insensibles. Many of us refer to it as the material and the immaterial, which really connects back to the first two questions that we established in these lessons. What's the purpose of school? And what do I know and how do I know it? So we've arrived at this point where we can know these things. Join us for episode 5, which will be the fourth lesson, where we dive into the guiding question, which kind of knowledge is more important? And what should we spend more of our time contemplating and thinking about? So excited to see you there. If you can make it to episode 5, I will tell you, that lesson was one of the best moments I've ever had at St. James Academy, working with our staff. And in the lessons that I went into and taught with the ninth graders, it was incredible. So stick with us. The next 2 episodes are going to blow you away. So thanks for listening.